Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
Well, we get a kind of an interesting way to kick off the weekend this week, Evan. How you doing over there?
Good. Bitcoin's up $700 right now.
Really? Well, that's another
stock in there. What?
There's another interesting way to start the week off.
Right.
He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. Welcome to another kickoff of the football weekend with Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. And of course, we are presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you could be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. You can also visit SharpleyTrading.com.
It's been a good week at the gym. I'm pretty
Has
sore.
It?
Yeah.
Hit
really sore.
Hit it hard?
Yeah.
I saw this morning, you look like you got your...
I got the cold brew coffee going. Yeah,
that's right.
Life chocolate milk.
Now, tell me about these... You guys have some coffee mugs or something that you're selling over there now?
We're doing some growler fills. A buddy of mine is doing cold brew coffee, zero doubt, and we use some coffee beans... That he actually will grind and then goes through the triple filtration system, reverse osmosis. We use Black Rifle coffee. It's really good. All organic right now. The blend I have is AK-47. as much as we get after it over at the gym,
what?
We have to have beverages that kind of match what we do.
He's Russian coffee and the AK-47.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Well, as I said, we've got a lot to talk about. Boston College and Notre Dame coming up tomorrow. And if you didn't get the news earlier this week, there is a game time change from the original noon kickoff.
Well, that's why we started selling the coffee, is we knew that it was going to be a noon kick. We had
that's
to get
right. And to start waking up early. So it's going to be a 3:30 kickoff here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Evan and Tim Growl will be on at 11 o'clock tomorrow with Game Day with Evan Sharpley. And then Game Day Sports Beat comes your way at noon tomorrow here on WSBT. So, of course, the Irish looking to rebound from their 20-19 loss to Georgia. We'll kind of talk about that, go back and break some stuff down in a little bit here on the show. But I wanted to start with this sort of cryptic message that Brian Kelly put out there last night. He meets with the media every Thursday after practice. It's his last little media address before game week, or you know, the game weekend gets started and that whole thing. So it's kind of a grab bag because it's the end of the week, kind of update injuries. You never really know what you're going to get.
It's usually pretty smooth, though.
Yeah, there's not really that much that newsworthy, I guess, that comes out of it, unless somebody happened to get hurt during the week. Mm-hmm. So then he dropped this one to the media last night. Take a listen to this.
Where are we going to play certain guys? You know, we're kind of in a flux in terms of where are we going to – where's Claypool fit? Like, here's a young receiver that just needs – you know, he just needs some seasoning. He needs some time, but we're kind of – is he an inside guy? Is he an outside guy? We can't take reps away from EQ. You know, and Cam's played a lot on the outside. So, quite frankly, we've made a decision, and I don't want to tell you what it's going to be because I think that would compromise us a little bit. But from a coaching standpoint, the first move here is to settle into where these guys can best help us. And then I think everything flows from there.
Sneaky. All right. Very sneaky. Not going to let it go. Okay, so something's going to happen, but I'm not going to tell you what.
Off the cuff, I think that if it is something big that he's not going to mention, it has to be something with St. Brown, I would think.
Moving him someplace, whether it's the slot. They wouldn't move him to the off.
I wouldn't think that an opposing team would worry too much right now about, you know, a guy who hasn't really played much in Claypool, and Cam Smith, who's done okay. He's put up some average numbers right now. But of course, if your main horse or marquee player is St. Brown, you're an opposing defense. You want to know where he is.
Well, here's the problem with Cam Smith right now, and this is nothing against him, but his numbers are what they are right now through two games. Cam Smith, who's supposed to be the speed guy, who's on that boundary on the opposite right. of EQ. He's supposed to be the guy who's going to stretch the field and that kind of stuff. Seven receptions for 54 yards. That's a 7.7 yards per catch average, and 29 of them came on his first reception of the game last week against Georgia. So almost half his yards. The guy who's supposed to be, like, he's the one who should theoretically have half as many yards as everybody, but all his receptions are in the 18 to 20 range. He's only averaging 7.7 right now.
What's kind of strange about the Brian Kelly type of offense is how the receiving positions are. You're almost really, like, typeset into a certain cast or a role.
Right.
You know, if you look over the last 5-plus years, the guy who's playing to the field is usually a speed guy with a little bit of versatility, you know, a T.J. Jones, Will Fuller, and now St. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And the backside guy, it's nice to have speed, but it's usually a bigger-bodied possession type of receiver who you can count on to run a comeback or a post, play physical, and average, you know, 10 to 15 yards a catch. And then you've got your slot receiver, which, you know, we've seen different guys thrown in there recently. You know, last year was C.J. Sanders, Chris Fink a little bit, who's getting the start this week. Freddie Canteen is who started there this year. But you kind of are typeset into that. And what we saw in the spring was something totally different than what we're seeing now. Is we are seeing guys like Miles Boykin, Chase Claypool, and St. Brown all in the field at the same time.
Right.
We really haven't seen that yet this year.
Not at all.
Which I was really surprised, number one, based on the type of spring and the type of fall that Miles Boykin and Chase Claypool had. And certainly, we're not at every practice. So So we don't know, you know, and coaches, they look for consistency.
Right.
And you'll hear that a lot of times at press conferences. You know, why isn't this player on the field? Well, he's got to be more consistent in practice.
Attention to detail.
Yeah, and it's that may be not the answer that a fan wants to hear, but a coach, you have an opinion, you see them on a daily basis, and if your certain level that, or standard that you're setting for them to play on Saturdays is not being reached throughout the week, then you're not going to play.
Let me ask you this, because I've been kind of thinking about this a little bit. All these things that we're hearing about these receivers, like what you just said right there, whether it's attention to detail, working on the traits, all that stuff. Does it remind you, though, of what we were hearing with the smaller defensive rotation when Brian Van Gorder was here? Is it similar? Is it similar but different? I mean, because really we saw that there was a lot of talent. Once Brian Van Gorder was gone, we saw a lot of talent that was getting on the field that is like, man, where have these guys been? I mean, that was the thing that was supposedly holding Niles Morgan back. Similar but different, or how do you see it?
Similar but different. And, you know, instead of it being football IQ or not knowing where you're supposed to line up or, you know, knowing the system, these are... I guess a certain criteria, and even could be, you know, off-field criteria that you have to reach,
right,
to be able to play. And I don't know how many other programs, you know, I'm sure that at other programs, you know, you want guys that are going to be performing in the classroom, be model citizens outside. But if you have talent, you would think that you'd be on the field playing. At least that's, you know, that's my thought. Is if you have a guy who's really good at football, you want him to be playing football.
Well, no, I mean, that's part of the thing in college, right? Because not everyone is a finished product. They're not going to get it all the time. I completely understand, like, if you can't do it in practice, how can you be expected to do it in a game?
The funny thing is, and granted, we were 3-9 my junior year.
Right.
But Golden Tate was a freshman, probably didn't know. He probably knew less than 5 plays.
He knew go.
and it's you know, looking back now, if you rewatch some of those games, you'll notice that regardless of what formation we were in, he was always lined up to our sideline. And the reason for that was if we were in a 2-minute drill,
somebody could
tell him the play. But my point is, if you're that talented, you got to be on the field.
Right.
And he was that talented. So we had to try to find ways to use him. Now, that, you know, that season wasn't. That's not why I'm saying this. I'm just speaking from a pure talent standpoint.
Right.
If you've got it, you know, coaching staff is going to, they're forced to find ways to get you the ball or forced to find ways for you to be on the field.
I want to play this cut one more time, and then we'll come back and talk some specifics again about what this could mean. So if you did, if you weren't with us 10 minutes ago, right at the top of the show, Brian Kelly in his Thursday post-practice media gathering was asked about wide receivers, and this is what he had to say about what's going to happen this weekend regarding his receivers.
Where are we going to play certain guys? You know, we're kind of in a flux in terms of where are we going to – where's Claypool fit? Like, here's a young receiver that just needs – you know, he just needs some seasoning. He needs some time, but we're kind of – is he an inside guy? Is he an outside guy? We can't take reps away from EQ, you know, and Cam's played a lot on the outside, so – quite frankly, we've made a decision, and I don't want to tell you what it's going to be because I think that would compromise us a little bit. But from a coaching standpoint, the first move here is to settle into where these guys can best help us. And then I think everything flows from there.
Okay, so there you have it. Now, coming into this week, the depth chart, it was EQ – and then Miles Boykin behind him at EQ's receiver spot. In the slot, it was Chris Fink with Claypool behind him. Right. And then it was Cam Smith on the boundary with Michael Young behind him. So let me throw some different scenarios.
Well, there's a lot of them, aren't there?
Yeah, I know. I mean, take your pick, right? And we've kind of talked about this. Would you move St. Brown inside to the slot and put Claypool outside at his spot?
Does that make sense? I think it just needs to be a flavor.
This isn't necessarily every time, just moving him around.
I think you work your base sets of your normal X, you know, your normal X, Y, Z, F receiving positions. Then it would include the tight end. But then you also need to be able to move guys around. You have a receiver that is versatile like St. Brown. And I don't think he necessarily wants to always be in the slot. But he can play inside and outside. So he could play to the field, he could play to the boundary, he could play in the slot. So there's some versatility there. Use him. If he is the marquee man, and the big question marks are where? Everyone else. Why not then center your passing attack around the guy that is proven, who has established himself as the number one, to try to get him more looks and more touches? The big knock last week against Georgia was what? They couldn't get him the ball.
Right.
I mean, there are a few. He had a drop on the flea flicker at the beginning of the game, and I believe one other drop later on. But for all of the quote-unquote targets that we heard about towards him, which unless you're being thrown the ball, you're not targeted. You could be the number one read, but that doesn't mean that you're necessarily getting the ball because the defense is trying to stop you. So what you have to do then is adjust and say, how can we use motion? How can we use different alignments to do what? To get you the ball, to try to isolate you.
Well, part of the problem last week, too, is the fact that George's rush was on top of Brandon Wimbush so quick. Well, and early on, it took them a while to really finally adjust to that because most of EQ's routes were downfield more. So then they finally did put him in the slot and ran him the slant, and he was reaching. He didn't look the most comfortable in there, but that's what they had to do to get him the ball, and that's why Chris Fink finally had some success as well when he was in there because they were looking shorter first.
I like him in the slot. I think he's a great slot receiver. Has a great relationship and chemistry with Brandon Wimbush. I know we talk about the spring and the fall. He had a great spring and fall too. You know, it was every time we were at practice, he was making some type of play.
Right.
And he just, for whatever reason, you have those guys that have that innate ability or knack to be around the football and get open.
So you've talked about, and again, we haven't seen practice in, what, almost a month now, basically.
Right.
I guess was the last one, the open practice at the stadium? Was that the last one we got to see? So it's been a while. Freddie Canteen definitely didn't wow anybody at that practice. You've talked about getting your best guys on the field. If you had to choose right now, regardless of what spot you were going to put him in, what three guys would be your first options to put him out there?
I wouldn't go three wide.
You'd go four?
Yeah, why not?
But a tight end's probably going to be one of them, though, too,
well, that's okay. Then we can have him in there as well. I would say right now, I mean, what was listed, probably the one change I would make would be Cam Smith. I think I leave Fink in the slot right now. I mean, he proved he could make some catches last week. I'd leave St. Brown where he is, and then I would look to the backside, either a Claypool or Boykin mix. to the short side of the field.
Right.
But I think that it would be smart to move St. Brown around a little bit. And I'd like to see a few more 4 and 5 wide sets. I mean, I know early on it was we're going to run the football, and I think that still needs to be the main crux. And it was tough sledding last week. It was. I was waiting for that 4 or 5 wide, let's spread it out, let's try to minimize the speed laterally of Georgia. Mm-hmm. That never really happened. And if, it's a pretty deep receiving group.
Is that part of the problem, though?
That might
because
be part
it
of
is
the problem.
So deep.
And I think, too, the other thing is it's there aren't a lot of guys that are separating themselves from the pack. It's St. Brown and then the pack.
Right.
So it's like, all right, do we flip a coin on who's going to be out there? And that's really what I'm taking from Kelly's statement is, we don't really know who to play. We know that each guy kind of brings something new. So, all right, let's decide what we want to get on the field. What is our philosophy, our identity? And then we need to get those guys on the field in that certain role.
So your thinking is, rather than a new face that maybe we're going to see, you're thinking if it was you, you would just be moving EQ around to different spots.
Yeah, and honestly, too, I know we talked about this before we started, is if you're not going to say something, it's got to be him, right? He's not playing tight end or running back.
Hey, who knows at this point?
We don't know. I mean, that'd be my thought, because again, you're not gonna really hide a guy who hasn't played. We have a secret weapon. We haven't played in 2 games.
Right.
I mean, that's ooh, not really what it is.
Where's he
right?
been?
Yeah. The secret weapon is a guy who almost had 1,000 yards catching last year receiving. What are you going to do with him? How are you going to game plan to use him? Teams would be more worried about that than, are we going to move Chris Finker, Cam Smith to the slot? Or is CJ Sanders going to play? Or are we going to see Chase Claypool or Miles Boykin?
But the bottom line is, if whether it's Fink in the slot or Boykin outside Claypool, if somebody starts producing more, then that helps out EQ
absolutely
directly as well.
And I mean, I think that's the struggle right now, is it needs to be a more balanced attack because everyone's eyes are on him.
Right.
If you roll a safety over the top, you got to have other guys that are making plays, especially over the middle of the field. And that's what Fink brought, at least, a little bit of that flavor last week.
Yeah, I one thing that we were talking about right before we came on the air. Now, you talked in our first show about how Brandon Wimbush came with you last year, worked out with you, and did some of that stuff. Chris Finck,
he did,
is a guy that he brought with him to work out with him.
Which, honestly, to me was a little bit surprising. I didn't really know that was the type of relationship that they had. Chris put in the work, hard worker. And you could automatically tell and see that they had a pretty good camaraderie as far as kind of understanding each other, in and out of breaks and that type of timing, which, again, some guys just click like that. And when we were at practices, it was the same thing. Whether or not, he was specifically targeting him or working through a read progression, if you get open, you're going to hope that the quarterback is going to find you based on how that progression or read is set up.
All right. So we'll all find out together tomorrow at 3:30 exactly what all this stuff means as far as the wide receivers
go. Wing T tomorrow.
That's right. 12:18, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Let's talk a little Brandon Wimbush. We haven't really touched a whole lot on last week's game. Let's start off. Here's a comment from Brian Kelly talking about the points of emphasis for Wimbush after seeing him out there against that tough Georgia defense last week.
And then it happens in the game. Just trust what you see and go with it. Don't be indecisive. Be decisive. Trust it and go with it. I think that's probably the biggest learning curve for all young quarterbacks, is that at times they become a little bit, they think a little bit too much instead of just trusting it and going with it. So just trust your teaching. I think he learned a lot from that game. I think it'll be a springboard for him.
All right, Evan, you're the former quarterback. So how much of what we saw from Wimbush last week was due to him, and how much of it was just due to what Georgia was making him do, basically?
Well, yeah, and when the question was asked, too, it took Kelly a few seconds to kind of get around to saying, I don't really know what he could have done better. Yeah. And that was kind of my feeling, too, is it wasn't his best game, and he'll admit that, too. But, you're pressured 9 times, 3 sacks, and there are some other throws. And once that pressure is established, there are going to be times where you're probably going to let the ball go a little bit sooner than you want to. You might eject out of the pocket a little bit sooner than you had planned. Once that it's the perceived pressure that changes your internal clock, because every quarterback has that internal clock of, all right, ball's got to be out, ball's got to be out.
Right.
And that shortens after you get hit. That shortens after a consistent amount of pressure, and that's really what it was. So he's going to look back. And if you're counting, you know, you've got three sacks, the nine pressures. He was 20 of 40. So of his 20 incompletions, you're saying 12 of those were some type of pressure and could have been more. So now you're really saying, all right, there are eight throws that were on him. So, sure, he would have probably loved to have been 28 for 40.
Right.
And maybe be a little more consistent on some of those throws. But anytime you can pressure the quarterback, it automatically changes the dynamic.
But I don't think – I think they knew they were going to have to get more out of Wimbush through the air last week than they did against Temple. But at the same time, I don't think they wanted to throw 40 times.
No.
But the way Georgia shut down that run, there wasn't much other option.
And that really was the plan for the Notre Dame defense too, is for the Georgia offense, is they wanted to run the ball enough where Frum didn't have to throw the ball 40 times.
Right.
And he was getting upwards of close to that mid-20s. 30 range, which I thought was high too, but your point is exactly correct, is if Notre Dame doesn't have the struggles running the football, you're not going to see Brandon Wimbush have to throw the ball 40 times. It's going to be much more balanced.
Darren and I were talking about this the other day on SportsBeat. I mean, the other thing is Georgia obviously had a very strong emphasis on not letting Brandon Wimbush get going with his legs.
Yeah.
Not only that, They also took away his ability to get out of the pocket, try to avoid some of that rush by throwing
speed
on the run, because, yeah, they were. It's just
lateral,
amazing.
Yeah, Low Carter and Bellamy, man, I mean, and then really Roquan Smith, all their linebackers, that lateral speed, the linear lateral, the forward, backward, side to side was really impressive. And Wimbush talked about it after the game, too. You know, that was the question was posed, was there anything that you hadn't prepared for? And it had nothing to do with the X's and O's. It had everything to do with the physical speed and the traits. You know, you get out there, and it's different than what you see on film. You're like, okay, I know where this guy's going to be, where this guy's going to be. Here's their coverage scheme. Here's what they're doing up front with their twists or their blitzes. All right, great. They probably saw exactly what they expected. But then it's coming in a little faster than what they saw on tape or what they expected or what you saw in practice.
Yeah.
And that changes the dynamic. In week one, you saw Wimbush make some plays with his feet. Where? Sideline and then get up field.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen. Those lanes were not there, and those lateral angles were, boom, they were shut down.
And there's a big difference, regardless of how good you are and how fast you are, there's a big difference when you haven't played, you played one real game in the last year and a half, mm-hmm. and there's a big difference when you're seeing that kind of speed as well.
And I know the one play that was, you know, signaled out was the third down where... and I think Kelly mentioned, you know, probably should have stuck his foot up and got the first down. I'm sure he would agree with that too. But guess what? In week one, he took it outside and got 20.
Yeah.
So if your experience is I can get this corner, you're probably going to try to take it. Looking back on film, yeah, probably would have wanted plant, dive forward and get the first down.
That's right. We're going to talk a little BC coming up here in a few minutes. We'll also there's some other points that we want to get to regarding Notre Dame against Georgia last week, including is that loss, it's another close loss, is it the same as last week? We'll touch that. I'll ask Evan that coming up next when we return. It's 12:23, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Fighting Irish ship it up to Boston tomorrow. It is 12:27 on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Things get going tomorrow with the Jack Swarbrick Show. That is at 9 o'clock. No Brian Kelly. Actually, that's at 10 o'clock. No Brian Kelly radio show this week because the team did leave early to get out to Boston. At 11 o'clock, it's game day with my partner Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl joining you guys this week. Evan is Don Crickey,
yeah,
voice of the Irish. He'll be calling in from Boston.
I always ask him about his voice, how he gets his voice in tip-top condition.
Uh-huh.
He takes me too serious, though. He thinks I'm just joking.
That's a straight-up question.
How I can get on his level.
It takes you very literally, huh?
Yeah.
Former Notre Dame player, current chief orthopedic surgeon for the team, Brian Radigan, will also be on with you guys tomorrow. And then continuing the tribute to ERA, 1972 to 74 defensive end Jim Stock.
We've had some great stories over the last couple of weeks with players.
Got a couple of them last week. That was some good stuff.
Yeah, it's been really great, and obviously you know a tribute to him and remembering him, and it's been awesome to talk with those guys. And we had Air on our show a couple of years ago, and this is what everyone said too. He just was so sharp even in his older age.
He really was
remembering things, and yeah, it was pretty amazing. So we'll continue doing that each week.
All right, Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat starts at noon tomorrow. The game is at 3:30 kickoff here on WSBT, and the official Notre Dame post game show is at, well, after the game, obviously, Darren Pritchett and Reggie Brooks. So that is all tomorrow right here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Now, I talked about this before we went into the break. Evan, another close loss, 1 point, 20-19. But did it have a different feel to you compared to last year?
I mean, they were competitive. It didn't feel like there was a runaway train where momentum was swinging opposite. You know, it was kind of, I felt like a normal kind of peaks and valleys. And the one thing, too, that I've been really paying attention to is how they're playing in the fourth quarter. I don't think that they're getting beat up. There were a number of games, it was kind of like they were running out of gas in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I didn't get that feel.
Well, they came up with big defensive stops in the fourth quarter against Georgia.
You want to win the game. You do. And so, yes, that feel is still the same as last year, is we lost another close game.
Yeah.
And really, over Brian Kelly's tenure, a lot of those, aside from 2012, where they won almost all of those close games, and especially against some primetime opponents like Georgia, you want to win those games. That's a marquee, that's a signature win that could really define how the season goes. But in looking at the film, they did some great things too. You know, it wasn't like they lost by two touchdowns.
Right.
It was competitive. They had opportunities to win. You know, you trade a couple of those field goals and score touchdowns, we might be talking about a dominating victory or a 10-point win or a 7-point win. I don't know.
Very easy. And I think if they had won one of those games or won a couple of those games before you have a loss like that, then it's a different scenario, because now all of a sudden you absolutely have a different feel. But unfortunately, they didn't.
And we don't know inside the locker room. You know, we heard Drew Tranquil talk after the game saying that he's never seen a group more dedicated to winning now, and he feels bad for the teams that are going to be playing against them over the course of the season. That you want to hear those types of things, but you don't know how it really is in the locker room. You know, with all the things that have changed since January, new staff and the culture changes, you would assume that the mentality is different. But you got to win those close games at some point.
Ultimately,
you still have to win. You can keep
yep.
talking about it, but you got to win.
One thing, well, I lost my train of thought there. Let's just talk about BC. I'll come back to it.
BC, yeah. Going into Boston for me, it was an intimidating atmosphere. Smaller stadium, kind of right on top of you. The fans were unpleasant. And when we played there, we played later in the day, so they had plenty of time to prepare for the game.
That's true. There were a lot of night games.
Now they get 3.5 extra hours, though, I guess. It's not the noon kick, so 3.5 extra hours. We'll see. You know, this is a team right now this is trying to change their identity on offense, trying to go a little more tempo. They've got a young quarterback in Anthony Brown who back home trains with the same quarterback coach Brandon Wimbush does. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so they know each other. They've crossed paths. They've trained together. He's talented. It's just, you know, from top to bottom, the offense doesn't have a lot of firepower, and they're going to struggle.
One thing they're trying to do, you mentioned it, going up-tempo. Right. They want to run 85 to 90 plays a game. They're averaging 87 through their first two games right now. They beat Northern Illinois. They lost to Wake fairly handily last week. But one of the things, we talked to Mike Sullivan, who covers BC football out there. What he was saying is they're so beat up, not necessarily beat up, but they lost their center. Yeah. They've got another guy who would have been the starting right guard hurt in the spring.
Right.
So really, they'd like to be able to rotate linemen in there to keep up that
don't
tempo,
really
but
it.
They don't have that right now.
So running tempo is okay when you have a good offense. If you run tempo and you're going 3-and-out every time, that's not a good look, and that hurts your defense too. So, you know, the tempo, the tempo, if you can pick up a couple of first downs, the tempo is nice because it's a different flavor. It's usually hard to prepare for. I'm not putting it in the same boat as preparing for the triple option, but a lot of times scout teams in practice can't prepare your defense for what the tempo is going to actually look like in the game.
Yeah.
But like I said, if you're going three and out, or what happened last week was interceptions.
Short field. The defense.
Yeah, you're gonna really put your defense then in a bind continuously.
And turnovers have hurt them pretty good. They had the three interceptions by Anthony Brown, the quarterback, last week, and it did lead to those short field situations. He has four interceptions overall. They've also fumbled as well. So five turnovers through two games, that's not going to help you at all. Brown's kind of a big-armed guy. He's not necessarily a dual-threat guy, but he's at least mobile, and I would think that he's going to try to take some chances downfield against the Irish secondary.
I saw Anthony throw at an Elite 11 Nike camp. It would have been 2 years ago, and was really impressed. You know, he moves well in the pocket. You know, subtle movements to create space, but big time arm, can make a lot of the throws. You know, at this point in his stage of the career, it's going to be experience. It's going to be adjusting to the speed of the game, making the correct reads, and protecting the football. I would think that a lot of these guys, if you're mentioning the turnovers and the fumbles, a la The Program, if you've seen that movie, they might be.
It's been a while, but
they might all be walking around campus holding footballs over the next week or so.
Interesting that Notre Dame did not win a true road game last year. They're 5-11 on the road.
How many true road games did they have last year? One. All these neutral site games.
5-11 on the road since the start of 2013.
Wow.
Mike Elko, when he was at Wake Forest last year, held BC to 167 total yards. So BC has always been that thorn in Notre Dame's side. I know you've looked at this matchup pretty closely. Do you think that there is enough talent weighing in Notre Dame's side to...
I like the Irish.
To do away with any of those advantages, the underdog and the whole stepbrother thing.
I like the Irish in this game. I really do. I think they're going to bounce back. I think they're going to bounce back strong. Expectations, I think, you know, from Boston College, they're going to throw the kitchen sink on the offensive side. They're going to try to go tempo. They're going to try to go gadget plays. Adazio used Jeff Smith and a couple other guys with gadget plays last year consistently, and I think that they're going to try to do the same thing. You know, the tempo goes away if you can get off the field on third downs. That's going to be the big thing for the Irish defense, which they've done a great job so far this year. If you look at Georgia last week, third down conversions were very, very low, and that was why the Irish defense, I mean, they were opportunistic, created a couple of turnovers. I think that that's got to be the same as well. And then offensively, you've got to know where Harold Landry is. He's a great player up front, but this defense, I don't think is as good as several of their previous defenses were, which really kind of slowed down what Notre Dame's offense had done. I think there's going to be some opportunities to make some plays.
You mentioned Harold Landry led the nation 16 and a half sacks last year, just one through two games this year. And Mike Sullivan, who I mentioned, he covers BC for EagleAction.com. It's the rival site out there in Boston. We asked him this week on SportsBeat, what's the biggest concern that BC's defense should have regarding Notre Dame? And here's what he said.
It's that running quarterback thing. If they don't know how to solve that, and if they allow Wimbush and the Irish to control that time of possession, then they're not going to be able to make it up on offense. They're not going to be able to get into the rhythm that they want to go. One of the things that happened is after Wolford would have a really long drive every once in a while, even if it ended up without points, the Eagles would come back out and they wouldn't go right into that up-tempo motion. They would kind of go back into that sort of 2015, 2016 pace that they've been. But when they can get quick three and down stops and they go back and they push that rock and they really go forward and try to get it down your throats. But if Wimbush and the Irish are able to control that pace, then it's, the offensive side is not going to work either.
And opposing quarterbacks have given BC fits the first couple of weeks. The Northern Illinois and Wake Forest quarterbacks have both gone for over 90 yards against the Eagle defense. So I would have to think that with a guy like Brandon Wimbush, that's really going to favor the Irish in this matchup.
Yeah, Walford from Wake Forest, who Notre Dame saw the last couple of years. He went off last week.
Yeah.
And, Brandon will be a key part of the offense. And I thought it was interesting, Mike kind of saying that they revert back to the 2015-2016. Boston College does not want to get into a shootout here. They don't want that. So defensively, they're going to have to bottle up and really slow down Notre Dame's offense. And then offensively for them, although they're trying to push the tempo, they need to eat up some clock and go on long drives. I just don't know if they're going to be able to do that.
And that's, you know, something that you mentioned earlier as far as Notre Dame goes, the just drastic difference with that third down success, the Notre Dame defense with the third down success. Because, again, that goes to both your psyche and your physical conditioning late in the game. And I think that's a big factor. But, again, now looking at BC's defense, it's one thing, and I know a lot of people now, when you look at what gave Notre Dame fits last week, the offensive line and the protections and things like that, there were a lot of stunts and slants and all kinds of things like that, and some blitzes as well. And it's one thing for other teams to say, okay, here's the blueprint. If we do this, then maybe we'll be successful. But I just look at it and say, okay, it's one thing to talk about scheme, but Georgia athletically, do you think other teams, BC included, is going to have anywhere near the athletes needed to be able to confound Notre Dame the way Georgia did last week?
I think a lot of teams will look at the Georgia film and say, I wish we could do that. across the board, like we talked about, the lateral speed, the linear speed from that front, really the whole front seven of Georgia, you're not going to see too many front sevens like that this year on Notre Dame's schedule. Landry's a really great player, but I don't think the other guys around him are going to be the same caliber of like Bellamy and Carter and Trent Thompson too inside. There's going to be a little more of a fall off from a talent perspective. I mean, they're still good players, but you're not going to see the same type of motor, the same type of speed, which, you know, is it's in the, over the next couple of weeks, you might not see a front with some of that speed maybe until USC, really.
Right.
And I don't even know if they're going to match the same type of speed that Georgia brought last week. So it's going to be a different game up front for Notre Dame's offensive line, which I think that they'll take after what they experienced last
week. I would think so. Irish have won the past five meetings against Boston College since losing six straight in the series, but the Eagles, they've covered the spread in each of the last three meetings against the Irish, including 2 years ago at Fenway Park when Notre Dame squeaked out that 19-16 victory. So, we've got our prediction coming up later, but you're thinking that this game should be a whole lot different than that.
Yeah, I think it should. And especially too, coming off of playing a team like Georgia and now playing Boston College. There's a disparity between the level of talent, I would say, at each position, especially defensively too. I mean,
right.
That was and you're not going to face two backs like Nick Chubb and Sony Michel this week, which is I'm sure the defense then is going to be okay.
Going to be happier about that too. That's right. Coming up, no Dexter Williams last week for the Irish. That was a topic of conversation.
I had more carries than he did.
<That's>, we all did, didn't we?
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. We'll get back in and we'll look at some of Notre Dame's issues with the offensive line and some other things and kind of do some stock up, stock down for a couple of the position groups as well. Notre Dame and BC tomorrow right here on 96.1 FM WSBT. It's Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. It is 12:45. Hope you're enjoying your Friday. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch getting your Notre Dame football weekend started. Fighting Irish and Boston College kickoff at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. Game day with Evan Sharpley at 11 a.m. tomorrow. Budweiser's game day sports beat is at noon. And, of course, the post-game show as well. We've got a full day and night of Notre Dame football coming up tomorrow.
You can even come and work out at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
There you go.
Start the day off right.
All right. What time are you up? I know you've got a baby. What time are you up every day? Are you up all night?
Well, my wife is. Big shout out to her right now.
Yeah, do you guys trade off at all? Or?
I try to help. I did the sleepy feed last night, and then I think around 3:30, and then I was up. My alarm. I know I don't sleep to my alarm anymore. I still set it though. Yeah, we had a class this morning at 5:30 a.m.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was good. We do that Monday, Wednesday, Friday right now at 5:30, and then we've got some mid-morning classes and then an evening class.
Now, what kind of class is that when you say class?
We do some strength work. You know, we deadlift, squat. We squat every day. Big believer in a strong lower half. And
really? Every day?
Every day except Sunday. Yeah, Sunday we got to rest.
But that's interesting, though. Working the same group every day. That doesn't hinder your body. I mean, you look like you're doing pretty good.
Your body adapts to it, and we've seen some really good results with that. And you're still when you walk in the gym, you ask yourself how you feel. So some days are good days, and other days you're like, you know, I got to pull back a little bit. And then we move. It's kind of how we explain it. We flip things, throw things, jump on things, push things, pull things. You know, everybody's goals are a little bit different. You know, we have 7-year-olds coming in, all the way up to 70-plus-year-olds. Some people want to just power wash their house. Other people want to hit home runs or score touchdowns. So we've got a good community of people.
There you have it. And, of course, that's at Sharply Training. You can call them today for a complimentary class at 574-226-8234. But also visit sharplytraining.com. All right, we've got just a little bit of time left. Something we have not touched. By the way, I've got a little bit of a cold, so I don't know if that hindered my thinking process earlier, but that thought that I had that escaped me, it was just about the captains. I heard this week that the captains, like last year, they sort of overreacted when they were having all these mm-hmm. close losses and stuff like that, and they're a little more laid back this year. And I think that has to help just the mindset
I think, too, you know, a few of the things they did in the offseason where they had the SWAT teams of, you know, groups of eight mm-hmm. with trying to increase the leadership, you know, from top to bottom where it wasn't just the captains. I'm sure that's been very beneficial this past week in saying, you know, there's more than just four or five guys that we can go to and talk to. We can talk to kind of our leader of our group here, our small group, and discuss what happened and break things down.
Right. All right, now, Dexter Williams, absent from the offense. We've all talked about it after going for 124 yards on 6 carries against Temple. Nothing.
I don't know why.
And I don't think any of us know why. Brian Kelly was asked the day after, and here is his response.
Well, I don't think it's very unusual to go with what you consider your top backs. So we'll try to get them in. They're all really fine backs, but it's hard to get them all in the game. We love Dexter too. It's really difficult to get them all in the game. And, you know, Josh is a real fine pass blocker. You know, they do a lot of confusing things with blitzes and stunts up front. So Josh is really good at that stuff. So it goes week to week, you know. So we'll see what happens next week.
I get what he's saying to a point, but my point is still, with 8.5 minutes to go, they had the lead, and the offense, obviously, we're having a lot of problems all night long moving the ball against Georgia. I would still say that even if Josh Adams is the better blocker on blitzes, that Dexter Williams could be in there on first down, second down, carry the ball. And with that, I mean, Brian Kelly was talking about Brandon Wimbush, stick that foot in the ground and go. That's what Dexter Williams does. At least you give them a different look.
There still was pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing is I think there's going to be pressure regardless. I mean, you have one of the best athletes on your entire team. You've got to find ways to get him on the field somehow. I mean, you're seeing what he's doing on special teams. He shouldn't just be a special teams player. I think that's pretty clear at this point. Yeah, you have three really good running backs. Then put two of them on the field. I don't know. You know, you have to – if it's week to week and he's going to sit other games, I think that's a mistake. I think he's got to be on the field. Even if you put together, you know, a small package just for him weekly and say, hey – all right, Dexter, you're going to get 5 touches. You know, and here are your 5 plays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, coaches script plays in to start the game. You could script plays in for certain players. You know, especially if you have someone that's dynamic. Like, and we wouldn't be having this conversation if Notre Dame controls the line of scrimmage and Josh Adams runs for 80 or 90 yards. No one's talking about why isn't Dexter Williams playing, but you rush for very few yards and Adams, I think, only averaged a yard or 2 per carry. Now you're asking, well, why isn't this other dynamic player on the field?
And that's the thing. No matter what team you're talking about, when you're always going to have players at the same position with different skill sets, just like what we talked about with the receivers earlier. They all have their skill sets. You watch any game, and I watched the Monday Night Football game earlier this week. The Saints got three running backs with three completely different skill sets on the field in the first possession of the game. So, I mean, there are always opportunities to get these guys on and off, and I think that's the just after, again, I mean, after the Temple game, one of the first things everyone started talking about after seeing Dexter Williams is, why wasn't he running the ball more? He needs to be even ahead of Josh Adams, which I don't agree with, but he needs to be on the field.
Even one carry?
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get one carry?
At some point in a close game like that, when you're still trying to run the ball, and again, they had the lead, they were trying to protect it, they weren't able to do it, you would have thought that someone with his skill set would be out there on the field, but he wasn't. So, but I agree with what you're saying. When you've got all these different guys, there are a lot of different points during the game where you can get a guy on the field at some point.
I agree. Yeah, so. I mean, we'll see this week, I guess.
Yeah. We will. Okay, we've got just a little bit of time. You want to do some stock up, stock down?
Let's do it.
I'll let you pick the position group this time. Which group do you want to start with?
Start with the offensive line.
Okay. Let me see. What could it be? Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, for me, it's never as bad as you think it is, and it's usually never as good either. When you have your left tackle getting beat at the most important part of the game, you know, you're going to see that.
It's like missing free throws at the end of the game. Those are always going to stand
out
more.
But the offensive line, you know, it's a job that you don't really want, because nobody knows you're doing a good job when you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
And when you mess up, everybody knows. So, you know, they look at, you know, he's not a first round pick. He's not an All-American. He had a pretty good game. Quentin Nelson had a pretty good game. Where the real question for me right now is the right side, is Alex Barrs, and then the combination of Tommy Kramer and Robert Hainsey. I think right now, if you're looking from a consistency standpoint, and that's what the coaching staff is going to do after the game when they grade you out. They don't say, hey, you are really bad on these three plays. We're going to grade your entire performance on a curve. We're going to look at however many 60, 70 plays that you ran. It's going to be bringing up that right side of the line and being a little more consistent there. But for me, I mean, it's stock down right now, but I thought that they competed. I didn't think that it was a complete domination. You know, I thought that there was a wash at times. There just was no push. I mean, even on, you know, you saw zone read, you saw some direct handoffs. There just wasn't a lot of push consistently up front.
Well, and one of the things, too, and again, I'm not an offensive coordinator, but McGlinchey didn't just have problems on that last play. And he wasn't horrible the whole game, but at the same time, he could have used some help over there. And it would seem like an inline tight end to kind of help him out might be in order from time to time, but that didn't really happen either.
Think you have, you know, as a coordinator, when you have expectations of that type of talent, and he might be a right tackle at the next level. He might not be a left tackle. Mm-hmm. He might be a right tackle. And you have expectations. You're probably not going to give him help because you don't expect that he needs it. But it's okay to admit that and give him a little help. And, you know, I mean, you know, even a chip, you know, from a running back. Hey, we're going to pop you real quick. Then I'm going to release. Those types of things.
Do you have any offensive position group that was a stock up?
No.
Okay, I don't either. What is your biggest stock up, do you think, on the defensive side of the ball?
Nick Coleman. I thought he performed really
great.
Well. Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised with the way he tackled in the open field. You know, he made some really nice form tackles. It was a stock up for me there. And you know, I think overall right now the defense is trending in a good direction. There's excitement. I think you're seeing guys playing a little bit different. And, you know, there's some areas that are going to need to be corrected. There are some plays that were on the field that, you know, Georgia, if they had maybe made, that it could have gone differently. But
you can always say that in any game.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's fair.
It didn't happen. They got off the field on third down.
Julian Love had six tackles as well. And I really thought that the defense as a whole, I was really impressed with their open field tackling in general. And, Jay Hayes setting the edge and doing some of the stuff
Tranquil
that he did
a
over there.
Couple of plays too, playing physical. I think that there's a different level of confidence, a sense of understanding on we know what our philosophy is. Not throw out scheme. We just know our philosophy. On first down, we're going to do this. On second down, we're going to do this. Here's our money down on third down. We're getting off the field.
Real quick, Is it fair at all to say, okay, well, the defense looked this good, but how good was the Georgia offense?
Yes.
Okay.
And really, I point to the quarterback position. I thought that they were protective of a young quarterback. I didn't think that there were I didn't think that they opened up the playbook for him. The other thing, too, I was surprised is I thought they were going to run the ball more early. For a short period of time, they were throwing the ball more.
Yeah.
And Chubb was averaging 8 yards a carry.
I think they kind of maybe outsmarted themselves there
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, quick timeout. Back with our prediction. It is 12:57, Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT. We have less than a minute to go before we wind down this show. Pick for tomorrow, Evan.
I think Boston College has some talent on defense, but the firepower for this Notre Dame offense too much. I think they're going to be able to put up some points, and then defensively, they're starting to gel. I think they're going to play well. A lot of question marks on the Boston College offense. I've got Notre Dame winning big, 38-13.
I'm not going to give a score today because okay. I need to save that for tomorrow. But I do think that it'll be at least a couple of touchdowns. That's about what Notre Dame is favored by on the road. So I do, too. I think Notre Dame will be well over 30 points. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow. All right. Evan Sharpley, Sean Stiers, Leprechaun Lunch, WSBT, South Bend.